floating through the air. But 100 years from now.
I did a parachute jump quite a long time ago. Ended up in hospital for 2 weeks.
Between a solo jump, or
yeah. It is quite an amazing feeling when they just, open the door and you're a couple of thousand feet up, and they just go, "Come on," and you just—it's a leap of—it's a real leap of faith. You just go, "Right."
Did you land badly, or?
They watched me coming down, and they said it was fine. They came over and asked me why I hadn't got up. Sort of like, "Come on, get up." And I said, "I can't."
So you've broken your ankles?
I had a spiral fracture in the tibia and broke both sides of the fibula off. Quite a mess of it. And they
did
said
it hurt
it
at the time, or did you, were you sort of adrenaline up?
I heard it go snap, snap, snap. I heard all three snaps.
just the thought of that hurts me.
Well, they think it was probably just an uneven piece of ground, because it looked like I came down perfectly okay. So they just can only assume that I hit slightly uneven ground.
Snap, snap, snap.
Because it shows how fast then you were coming down the way that you landed.
Yeah.
It depends what kind of parachute, whether you've got one of those, or whether you've got one of those. This one. Do you remember?
I can't remember. No. But it was it's quite an amazing feeling, isn't it? It's something you can't imagine, really.
The closest I get to it is when you're scuba diving, you feel sort of underwater and you've got that sort of 360 weightlessness feel. And feels a lot safer than jumping out of an aeroplane to be sort of happy doing that.
All right. So, was there anything else that jumped out at anybody on the weekend? Two reminders. Did you get one of those? There you go.
I am reminded. I think I said it the last couple of times about feeling tired or not tired.
Mm-hmm.
Looking after myself from a low state of consciousness. It looks and feels like your options are limited.
Yes.
So when you're in it, it's quite... No. When I'm in it, I believe the feelings, because I'm feeling like shit.
Yes.
That's quite... in the past, it's been quite regular.
Yeah.
Feeling like shit. So.
Yeah.
But I'm also reminded, from a high state of consciousness, you can see infinitely greater possibilities. So just for even being in the sunshine or being outside, feeling free in the world, and their thoughts, but being aware of that, and then thinking, well, I feel good.
Mm.
And then the possibilities, it's the horizon seems to expand, whereas when I'm feeling miserable, it's me, all about me.
Yes.
And my thoughts.
Yeah.
So those are the two things that have
that's been good.
On this sort of t-shirt thing.
And again, it can look like that higher states of consciousness is dependent on things like it being sunny or you being in a conducive environment. It can look like that.
Yes.
And again, that's kind of, let's say that's an initial stage of seeing.
I feel like I'm still on initial.
And then,
today.
And then, every now and again, you'll catch a glimpse of the possibility that actually you could have that same sense of possibility. You could have that same good feeling when the sun isn't shining.
Yeah.
And you probably have already done so.
Yeah.
You just haven't noticed.
Yes. Stuff like waking up. This morning I woke up and the alarm didn't go off, but I woke up in time. And I was laying still thinking, look, I'm warm. I'm in my bed and I'm warm. I warmed up. Just we did this benefit thing last night at the Free and Barnet, North London. It's the free people's free library. And they've got Occupy people in there. It was all very mellow and drinking and everything, but it was cold in the building. And we were playing music and it's totally, I've never done anything like that. And it was raining and the back window of the car had got broken. So going there and back, it was freezing. I think, look, this is a in the moment thing. Totally interesting. In the moment, everything is great. Because I made it like that. Didn't particularly want to go. And we were there, these care in the community, bods dancing around to music I was playing, and I thought it was brilliant. People dancing in the library. I've never had a chance to free up like that, apart from going to a festival and paying. This is bizarre. It's like it's almost not anything to do with me. I'm just there. I'm just putting the needle on the record. I'm not sure if it's an analogy or not, but it was just very odd being in that notice of being in it. You know, I felt a bit pissed off because I was doing it, I'm getting paid. Well, I've just decided to be pissed off because I'm not getting paid. I'm in the moment and watching these nutters dancing around.
Right.
Well, that could have been me.
Yeah.
And if it just because I'm behind the table doesn't mean I'm not then. Free up. Just bonkers. Just bring it right back to, I've decided to be, I don't know if I've decided, but I was aware that I could change my thought. And I was in my bed at 12:30. I'm sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get a whole night's sleep. And even if I look like shit this morning, I'm not going to feel like shit today. I'm going to be totally on planet, man.
Okay.
I'm talking shit. I'm going to be quiet now. But just that, you know, caught it. I kept catching it. It's now for now.
Yeah. I just want to take something that you said. I just want to loop it back around again. It bears repetition, I think, and that is that this understanding has really got nothing to do with feeling good.
I like it.
As opposed to feeling bad.
Yes.
Or
it's good feeling.
Sorry?
It's good feeling.
Well, we would judge certain feelings as being better than others.
Yeah.
So for one person, you know, we'd have maybe put a different criteria around it, but essentially we have the prejudice, shall we say, that some feelings are better than others. And it seems to be more or less universal. You know, most people would say that they prefer, let's say, a feeling of joy to a feeling of guilt. You'd be hard pushed to find someone who, you know, if they really saw that they had a choice, that they would choose the guilt or the shame over the feeling of joy or feeling of freedom. So it seems that it's kind of built in, you know, that there are certain feelings that are, let's say, natural to us, that we enjoy, and there are other feelings which we're also capable of experiencing which are less comfortable in our bodies. And in fact, physiologically, that's also supported now by the physiological research that's been done, which shows that our bodies function better in an atmosphere of good feeling. So if we're actually feeling anxious, worried, stressed, guilty, sad, angry, what we would tend to put on the negative spectrum of feelings, if we're feeling those kind of feelings on a regular basis, the chemical changes that are happening in our body are actually counter to good health. They seem to have the cumulative effect of being detrimental on our health. And that's demonstrable now. Whereas someone who's generally speaking, most of the time, in a feeling of ease, being at ease with oneself, feeling of acceptance, feeling of love, compassion, feeling connected to other humans, trusting rather than feeling fearful. Those kind of feelings, they correspondingly release chemicals, hormones, and so forth into our bloodstream, which are actually good for us, which seem to promote healthy immune response, improved cell regeneration, etc. So, to me, there's an intelligence in the design there. You know, it seems like that intelligence runs all the way through. That can't be random, that our body is responding in a healthy way to certain kind of feeling states and in a not so healthy way to others. So given that's the case, we could conclude from that it's more natural to us to be feeling good most of the time.
The closer you get to that, being able to connect to that formlessness.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, you know, it's like when you go into meditation and it's that peace.
Yeah.
And so there isn't an awful lot of emotion going on as such, and the feeling. So, you know, the closer you get to that, the more natural that, you know, that is a natural state if we can overcome that. Start to think about things all the time, isn't it? It's sort of, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If we can get to that formless part of us.
That which we already are.
Yeah. Well, we take away the thoughts, so we can just keep, you know, like addressing the fact that what creates all of those emotions, etc., is just the thoughts, and getting beyond that puts us into that healthy state of not feeling, almost.
Yeah.
I can't quite.
Yes and no.
What I'm trying to say. Because I know when I've tried, but when I'm aware that I'm creating a lot of situations and circumstances by my thoughts, and I go, right, okay, now just hang on a minute, you know, let's get to a point and try and take myself back,
mm-hmm.
and clear the thoughts and get into that sort of, there's a book I've been reading by Frank Kinslow, and he talks about pure awareness and trying to get to the space between your thoughts,
mm-hmm.
that is nothing,
mm-hmm.
And if you know when you do actually start to glimpse that, it is a completely different space,
mm.
and it is so peaceful and calm. And he says you can maintain that, you know, if you know with practice and awareness, you know, you just can maintain that on a day-to-day basis,
mm-hmm.
without having to be in a meditative sort of situation or anything. And I think that's helped me a lot, because I've combined it with what we've been doing here, and it's helped, and I don't quite know how it's helped, because I'm still, there's something that's missing and I can't quite connect it all up, but it's helped me to understand that formlessness, because I think I was probably struggling to understand that concept,
mm.
And that's helped me to understand that there is just a space between the thoughts. You know, if you ask you, he says to just ask the question, sit quietly and ask the question about where will my next thought come from. And he said, if you're aware, there is just a little tiny space of nothing, complete nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you get this wonderful feeling of, wow, you know, it's sort of that complete peace.
Mm.
And he says, who is in that complete space of nothingness? He's more or less trying to say the same thing, in a way.
Yeah, well, it's not the same.
All right.
He's pointing in the same direction.
Right.
But there's a distinction which is worth drawing.
If you're in a state of nothingness and you're aware that there's a state of nothingness, you're still thinking it.
Exactly. You got it. You got it.
And if you're maintaining.
You got it.
Something you're having to do.
Exactly right. the very fact that if you have an awareness of what you might call a gap between the thoughts, that awareness can only come to you through thought.
Yes, and I think that's what he does point that out.
This again is paradox.
Yeah,
there's no such thing as a place of no thought, which you can be aware of.
No, I think that's actually reinterpreting what he said.
No, it could well be what he said, because there's a lot of meditation practices that say exactly the same. I've come across that in other forms as well, and it's a well-known practice to point people to the space between thoughts, and it's been worded in different ways. But the implication is that between thoughts there's somehow a nothing space where there's an absence of thought. But what the Three Principles teaches and enables you to see for yourself is that awareness of anything is only possible through thought. Even awareness of no thought.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you can point to it and say, there's a space there where there's no thought, you can only do that through the vehicle of thought.
So you can be aware that you were having no thoughts, but you can't be aware you are having no thoughts, effectively, because it's in the present.
Exactly.
So just as you're aware of it, there's no thought.
Exactly.
I think...
Yeah.
But you can
say you did have... You can look back and go for that 30 seconds or whatever. I don't think I was thinking it.
Well, you can think that you had no thoughts.
Yeah. And it's the past anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Exactly. That's just a thought that you're having now. But bear in mind that the vast majority of what we call thought is out of awareness anyway. That's its nature. So in that sense, most of our thinking is happening below the level of conscious awareness. So the fact that you don't notice a particular thought happening does not in any way mean there's no thought happening.
No, and that's, I think...
All right.
That's the bit I struggle with, because I mean, like the first weekend, it was, wow, yeah, I've got this, I really, this is really exciting. And I feel like I'm on the trampoline, because I was down, and then I'm...
Now you see it, now you don't.
Thinking, no, I don't do this. And then I'm, and I'm up and down, and I'm aware that there are such a lot of thoughts that go on that you're not, you can't almost get in touch with, and I keep saying to myself, so it doesn't matter. They're no different to the ones that you can get in touch with. They're
That's
just
right.
thoughts, but it somehow creates a block. And I can't quite. I don't know whether it's my, my left brain trying to say, no, you must understand what the thought is.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I keep telling myself, no, I don't need to understand what the thought is. It's just a thought.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's some conflict going on there, and I can't quite get to what it is.
Yeah, and I think another distinction which is helpful is to recognise the difference between, when we talk about thought here, and any of the things that you might read or hear of Sid Banks' material, he emphasises this over and over. He says, when I talk about thought, he says, I'm talking about it in the impersonal. And what I understand by what he means by that is that it's a bit like... You know, when we talk about electricity, I would use it as an analogy. When we talk about electricity, if somebody says, you know, tell me what electricity is. What's its nature, you know? What is it actually? You say, well, you know, you see this recorder here. It's plugged into, so that's what it's enabling it to work. You say, well, okay. Well, I understand that, but what is the electricity? Well, it travels through these wires. Well, what is it that's travelling through these wires? And if you keep going, you know, with that kind of line of question, eventually you end up in the wall somewhere to some other wires connected to a power source, right? And what you're talking about is something that becomes very nebulous. No one actually knows what electricity is. When we talk about electricity generation, we're not actually generating electricity. We're not making it as such. What we found is a way to harness it. And having harnessed it, we can then create all these applications of it, which is what all the things that we see and make use of. And thought's a bit like that. What we see are the results, the effects, the outward results of it. What we don't see is where it's coming from. There's like this power that it's coming out of, which is all it is. It's just this power coming into form, just like electricity. And there's that distinction between, when we talk about thought, like the way you're talking about it, what we're talking about is the content. You know, when we talk about the gap between thoughts, it's okay, there's one thought here, then there's a gap, then there's another thought. You're talking about individual thoughts now. What I'm talking about is the power of thought. Right?
Right.
Thought as a principle, not as a thing.
Okay.
That's the difference. That's what this is really about. That's why it's three principles, not three techniques or three practices or three things or anything like that. It's three principles. Thought is a principle. Humans think, just like humans breathe. So it's an intrinsic part of our nature as human beings. And as such, it's not anything that we have to worry about manipulating, trying to control, trying to get over it, get it out of the way, trying to switch it off. We don't have to do any of that. It's just a principle of being alive. We think. And the fact that we think, combined with the power of consciousness or awareness, together with this intelligence behind life, that's what gives us an experience of being alive, moment to moment. So it's a divine gift. It's not a curse. You see, the problem that I hear with a lot of these meditation practices is that thought becomes the enemy. We've got to find the space between the thought. We've got to get to the place of no thought. We've got to get the thought out of the way. We've got to make thought quieten down. We've got to get rid of the negative thoughts. Thought is not the enemy. Thought is like breathing. It's intrinsic. It's innate. It just happens to be the means by which we experience life.
So what happens if people have dementia?
Yes. Well, sorry, ask again.
You know when people get dementia?
Yeah.
When you say they're getting lost in their own thoughts?
Yes. What do you think? What have you seen happen there?
There's no communication, really.
They're in the moment, don't they?
Well, it's interesting to watch, because I've known and I've worked with some individuals with that kind of a diagnosis. And one of the things that I've seen is that, yeah, you're right, sometimes it looks like that person's in a thought world, shall we say, which bears no relation to whatever's going on around them. I mean, we say the person's in their own world. But I've also noticed that that person will generally, they'll have moments of lucidity where they'll completely connect to whoever is talking or listening to them, and they'll be right there in the present and often come out with something very insightful. And then they'll appear to get lost again and talk about something which is seemingly nonsensical. Now, what do we make of that? What's happening there?
They're taking their thoughts to be so real. I mean, a certain part of their thoughts, because all of us,
yeah,
essentially, if everything's thought, then
yeah,
it's the same thing, but they're just...
That's it. That's it. And in that sense, they're not doing anything different than the rest of us.
No.
When we say that person's in their own thought world, well, who isn't?
That's what I think.
It's just a spectrum of, to use the way you described it, of how real does it seem to you, if that's a spectrum of here and that's 100. So at any given moment, our thoughts seem more or less real to us. So the more lucid we are, the more that we can see, it's just thought. So even if we're having a crazy thought, we don't have to buy into it, we don't have to take it seriously. But the less aware of that we are, the more that thought seems like reality to us. And the end of this spectrum, of course, is someone who would be like a schizo. So a schizophrenic, a person who's diagnosed as schizophrenic, is someone who believes all of their thinking. All of it. So they don't see any of it as being just thought.
You know,
most of us see some of it as being and some of it not.
It's the words, literal words, English words that you use in a sentence. Lost in thought.
Lost in thought, yeah.
That's what we will do.
It's accurate, yeah. That's right. That's exactly right.
An interesting thing is, if everything is thought, I mean, if thought, even the awareness is thought, then the world is not there either. You know what I mean? I mean
yeah,
believing in that.
It's not.
That I am here and that you are all there. It's also, I could, with this, I can argue that, you know, at
yeah,
zero, basically. nothing really is there.
Right.
I mean,
which
I
is,
think, therefore I am.
Which is the deeper
kind of
truth that every tradition points to, is that nothing is what it seems. It's just the way that we're experiencing it.
There is the argument I've come across with a friend, the one who meditates on this a lot, but with Sufism, he kind of argues that he's like, but thought, and maybe there's something there, the thought that we're people are trying to manipulate or quiet or look in between. It seems like there's a different energy to that than that awareness.
Yes.
And he argued, and I kind of didn't have an answer, that the awareness is not thought, it's just the... Is it the same as consciousness?
I don't know.
I would say it's
the same as consciousness. Yeah, it's that which is aware of what you're experiencing in the moment, which we could call a consciousness, we could also call it awareness.
Maybe that's what I'm kind of... Maybe that's what...
It's freeing yourself and finding that sort of that consciousness and realizing that that's actually how it's the when we become aware of our thoughts and that's what creates our reality. It's hard.
And this is we're up against the limitations of language. But keep in mind that thought and consciousness are not separate things.
No, they're together.
They're not separate things. It's the combination that gives us the experience. And if you take any one of them away, there's no experience. So the idea that you can have pure awareness without thought bringing it to life for you is nonsensical. It can only come to your senses via thought.
I think what he was trying to sort of demonstrate was that consciousness.
Yes.
No, he was trying to take you to that level of actually.
Yeah. And that's what most meditation practices are aiming towards.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like disidentifying from all the chattering thoughts that most of us are habitually caught in.
Yeah.
Now, the beauty of the three principles is that it will take you to the same place without the practice.
We had an insight that our insights were just thoughts.
Insights are thoughts also.
We just go, oh.
But the difference between them is, it's an original thought. It's something that you haven't thought before.
Mm.
So it's like a new thought for you. Someone else might have thought it.
Mm.
But when you see something new that you hadn't thought about before, it brings a different feeling with it, which is recognisable. It's like, And if you ask someone about that, when they describe to you what happened, when you have a real insight, what they talk about is that their consciousness has actually expanded.
Mm.
And it's an expansion, and that's why I put in this sentence here, you have greater possibilities from a different level of consciousness, and you do. Literally, you see things now that you couldn't see a moment ago. So you go from having narrow vision to like wide-angle vision. And that's what Sid Bank said, there's no end to that. You can keep on seeing more and more and more and more and more. Which is amazing. It's not just that you have one insight, that's it. You can have further and further and further levels of insight for the rest of your life.
But I don't necessarily see what he's saying as separate or different from what, for example, all these things about awareness and, there's Eckhart Tolle or...
Well, there's one crucial difference here is that he's saying you don't have to do anything to get anywhere.
Yeah, I mean this is the difference, but not their point. It's almost there's a lot more analyzing and sort of segmenting happening on the other end, where it's like, yes, this is the quality of this type of thinking that we're very conscious of, or whatever we call thought,
mm-hmm.
and then the other one we call awareness, and a lot. That's kind of it's almost what I'm seeing. It's probably that.
Yeah.
You're just kind of segmenting. This is subconscious, this is conscious.
That's it. You get into dealing with the content.
So there's a lot more...
Yeah, that is a key difference in my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the three principles takes you away from the content. It says, look, don't worry about that. It's all content. Whether you say it's conscious, unconscious.
There's no end to getting into that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's no end to it. What this is pointing towards is that from which it's all arising. Just that. that from which it's all arising is the same place. It's the same place in you, it's the same place in me, it's the same place in everybody. And that place is that divine intelligence, which is the energy behind all of life. Now that intelligence seems, let's say, it seems biased towards generating the kind of thoughts and feelings for us which are conducive to health.
But I do think that Eckhart Tolle and that they're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, but they're talking about it in a different way.
Yeah, they're talking, I mean, the individual experience, whether it's, that's why I'm saying that when you look at it, you know, Sarah may look, be talking to somebody and see the same thing.
Mm.
You're saying that you saw the book, you reread the book that you've written, and you were seeing the three principles.
That's
well,
it.
How do you know that, that the truth was there, but
yes.
still in different words? That's
yes.
all.
Yes.
So
how do we know what?
How do you know that the three principles? What I'm saying is, it's like you're saying that Sid Barrett says, according to what he says, he says, I'm not saying anything new.
Yes.
He said the sages and seers of the past, any culture, where there's truth, I'm saying the same thing.
That's right.
But he put it in a slightly different way.
Which was new. And still is. Yeah.
But I don't see it as new.
Okay.
No, what
it doesn't
I'm
matter.
Saying, no, what I'm saying is that, you know, I see the same thing, whichever way I look at it.
Yeah.
From this way to that, or that way to this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see it as different.
Yeah, I think at some point you'll see a difference, and at some point you won't. And that's been my experience too. So
I think it's a bit deeper where he went as to just, this is the only thing.
It's like a prism, you know. It depends which bit, which facet you're looking through at this given moment. From a certain perspective, you see, yeah, he's saying exactly the same thing as Byron Katie, Eckhart Tolle, everybody else. But what I find is, if I turn that prism around and I look from a different perspective, I see something quite unique here that I haven't seen in any of those things. So for me, again, both of those are true. He's saying exactly the same, and he put it in a unique way which no one else has actually replicated. And if I think they have, that's a mistake in my own understanding. So whenever I say, oh, it's just the same as what so-and-so says, if I sit with that for a while, then I go back to, I realise, no, it's not. I just thought it was.
There's no intellectual content.
Sorry?
There's no intellectual content. You don't have to write a 10 million page.
That's right. There's
the truth.
There's no content, there's no practice.
Yeah.
And there's no technique.
There's nothing special and different because we've articulated it in this very complicated way.
That's right. And there's nowhere to get to.
Yeah.
There's no effort, really.
There's no effort. There's nothing to do.
Yes. There's open to all.
It's what's for some people is very difficult because you're over intellectualizing something.
That's right.
Maybe that's why I seem to have got it, because I'm not very intellectual, but
absolutely, you've got an advantage over the rest of us. Well, some people just don't have that kind of a brain that has to really, you know, go into it in that way, and actually they're at an advantage.
Because I was coming in this morning thinking, this is wonderful, this is marvellous, and I'm feeling a bit down because you're all sort of, to me, sorry.
Go for it.
I'm thinking too much.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
Surrender to it.
Yeah, absolutely know what you mean.
And that's why, what was the girl's name that she was thinking too much about it, you know?
Yeah.
But also in the books that Sid wrote, you know, and you remember you saying, well, don't read too much into the content, get the feeling. But that those two books were very much about people that were trying to sort of overanalyze it.
Yes.
Which was quite interesting, because that's what showed me. That's where they were going wrong.
It shows you what doesn't work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that might have helped me then to come to a deeper sort of
reference. Yeah, but it was still you that saw that. See, a lot of people read that Buller's books and they don't see that.
I'm not meaning to be rude. No, that's fine. But it is something quite... I haven't read a lot of books. I've read some books about, you know, this sort of thing. and it's quite interesting. I've kept a diary, and the diary I've had for a long time, and it's it's a Rumi, like a good poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, that's really good, isn't it? Because some of the things in it are really...
It speaks to you.
Oh, yes. And I thought, and then I've chosen that book to write my diary on. You know, it's all like steps leading to this, isn't it? But I think that's quite important, this over-intellectualising of analysing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trying
right.
to work it out, I don't think that works.
Yeah, absolutely
well,
right.
Not for me.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't. But there's almost something that I can't overcome. You know, it's compelling me, and as much as my one part of my brain saying, "Don't do it, don't do it, you don't need to do it," the other part's going, and it's so frustrating because I think, I get it, but there's something that won't allow me to get it almost, and I know that's a thought, but I can't.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
like,
me mad.
It's like a tussle that goes on inside, isn't it?
Because I don't consider myself particularly intellectual either. I'm thinking the first weekend, yes, this is something I really understand. And I actually thought the same thing. Oh, it's because I'm not very clever.
Yeah.
And it's easy to understand because there's nothing to do. You know? And then over the course of like being away in Australia with my family, it just went all completely to pot. You know, and I just thought, I just sort of felt like I'd gone back almost 15 years, and when I came back, I'm thinking, so what was that about?
Yeah, what do you make of that?
Well, I still don't know. So I have spent, part of me doesn't want to think about it, and the other part of me wants to think, well, why did I feel like that while I was away?
Yeah. It's a good question, though. I mean, what did you reach as a conclusion from that?
Well,
given what you know about the nature of thought and so on.
Well, it's clearly my thoughts, and I think it's the past. You know, the past about all my past and families and I don't know. I think it's probably because it's actually quite painful to go there. So there's part of me that sort of doesn't want to. So.
Because it touches certain feelings in you, yeah. When you say go there, you mean go there in your mind, not go there physically, is that?
Well, it's almost both.
Both, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then you sort of, there's nothing more important to be there, but when I'm there, I want to come home.
Mm.
It's really quite bizarre.
Well, not really, because whenever we go somewhere and we have a strong feeling reaction, which is not comfortable, we want to take ourselves away, thinking that when we're somewhere else, we won't feel that way. What we don't realise is we can take those feelings with us.
Exactly, yeah. And I know all that.
Yeah.
Which is what's so frustrating, because there's such a lot of understanding on one level.
Yeah.
And I can't quite connect with it on another level.
Yeah.
It's
but it looks like part of it is just letting yourself feel what's there, without needing to add anything to it, you know, without even needing to understand it. Just to let yourself feel what's there. Sometimes the body just needs to feel something. It's just part of that process of just feeling it, letting it go. Feeling it, letting it go. We can't let it go unless we've felt it.
Yeah. There was one difference this time. I didn't try and fix them, you know, like with homeopathy and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You're always thinking that, you know, somebody needs fixing, and I didn't have the desire to do any of that.
That's great.
It was there, but it was just felt really difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you go into that a bit further, you say, well, what makes it difficult? You know, if you're in a situation and you're experiencing it as tough or difficult, what is it that makes a situation seem difficult as opposed to easy? What makes the difference?
Well, it's clearly it's my thoughts, isn't it? Because, you know, the tendency is to want to say, it's, you know, it's everybody else that's around me.
That's
it's,
it.
It's clearly not. And I knew, you know, when I was there, I kept saying to myself, you know, it's not three screaming children waking me up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and it's not my daughter sort of pulling her hair out with them and all of that. It's none of that.
But it probably looked like that at the time.
Oh, it certainly did. Yeah, but as I said, that's what I mean. On one level, I was thinking, well, this is definitely, it's definitely them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on the other level, I'm going, no, it isn't. You know, and it's that conflict that's really quite difficult at the moment.
Yeah.
Because it's just accepting what part of me knows.
Yeah.
The other part is going,
this is not thought, this is reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's it. That's the distinction that this makes for us. It shows us that whenever we can't see that it's just thought, that's where we suffer. Because wherever we can't see that it's thought, it looks like reality.
Yeah.
It looks like reality is somehow impinging on us and making us feel some way that we wouldn't otherwise be feeling.
And it's actually part of the journey. It's like you talked about level one and two.
Yeah.
At some other stage, it goes a bit deeper.
Yeah.
You've obviously got something there, but not
that's it,
quite as much as for on the next stage, without control or without anything.
Yeah.
Who knows when or where.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that you can see it as clear as anything in one circumstance, and in another you're completely blind.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's true of all of us. And that will always be true.
Mm.
I don't know whether this is good or bad news, but it's for me it's good to keep that in mind. That's always going to be true. There's always going to be situations where you can't see that it's just thought. It's really going to look like that's real. That's real life.
But once you have a glimpse of the inside or whatever, there's something there that even when you are blind, there's something that still connects.
Yes. And that's partly what Sharon's saying, is that there's a background awareness.
Yeah.
I know enough already not to take this so seriously, but I can't help it. Yeah, that's right.
And I did think on the way back that it was really good that I'm not really apart. We all went down with a gastric bug, and that was the only time I offered anybody a remedy, you know, otherwise I'm normally going, oh, you know, they need this and they need that.
Yeah, you've got to sort everybody out.
Yeah, and actually I'm thinking there's nothing wrong with them.
Hmm.
No, they don't need fixing.
But at the same time, there's something wrong with me, right?
Yeah, exactly, I know.
Right?
But
that's what I'm hearing here, and it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, just the other side of it.
Exactly, but it's that, it's like my, there's some part of me that will not go there.
Yeah.
But
you see what I put on this reminders, the first ones. The first trap of the mind is to believe that circumstances have to change before you can feel okay. The second is to believe that other people have to change. So you got over that one.
Yeah, I know it's not good.
The third trap of the mind is to believe that you have to change.
Mm.
Right? That's the one you're caught in.
And that's where it's difficult.
Wait a minute. I just want to let that go in.
It doesn't feel like I need to change. It feels like I need to tap into what's stopping me.
Yeah.
It feels like, and it has done for years, feels
yeah.
like there's a complete lock somewhere, and that I'm sort of screaming to get out.
Yeah.
And I have tried so many different ways to access what it is that's stopping me. And I know it's a past thing, and even now I'm listening to what I'm saying, I'm thinking that's a thought, but I can't. It's really hard, and I'm sure it will come.
Yeah.
But it's really, it's just getting to letting go and realise that it's getting the complete thing, isn't it? I sort of go there and then I come back again.
Yeah. But what I noticed, and it happened just in this conversation that we're having, when you start to go there, there's a feeling that comes up. And it might be that, I think what I saw happen was that probably something in you judged that feeling has been something that you didn't want to feel, or that you weren't ready to feel, or that you didn't want to feel now. So there was a conflict between letting that feeling come in and blocking it off. And what I saw is if you could just let yourself feel that, whatever it is, minus the judgment, that's what completes the cycle. That's what enables you to let it go. It's just to notice, there's always a feeling that comes with it. And when the body's ready to let something go, there'll be a feeling that comes. It might be a sadness, it might be a fear, I don't know. You know, it's different for different people. But just allowing that feeling to be without the judgment about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what does it. That's all that's necessary. And you don't have to go looking for it. You don't have to try and dig it out. Because it's very close anyway, you know. We're just talking about it now, and you didn't have to go back to Australia to reaccess it. It's right there. But it's just allowing that feeling to come into your body and to let it go without adding anything to it. Without making it mean anything. That's all. You don't have to give it any meaning, make it special or anything. It's just a feeling.
It's gone now, so.
It comes and goes, that's the nature of it.
I'm sure it will come back again, but it's decided to disappear.
Yeah. And you might cycle around that a number of times. You might go in and out of feeling it, but each time you notice your relationship to it can change, even though it might keep coming back. If you meet it with acceptance rather than with judgment, then gradually it just loses its hold over you. So it's that old what we resist persists phenomenon. You know, the more you kind of try not to feel it or get rid of it or push it away or lessen it, the more it seems to push back. The more you just go, oh, there it is again. Okay, feel like crying, I'm just going to cry. Feel like shouting, I'm just going to shout. You know, whatever it is, if you just go with it, it loses its hold on you quite quickly. It's just being willing to let yourself feel it.
This is a schizophrenic thing, because there's part of me saying, yes, there's nothing more I want than to be able to let it go, and then the other part going, and I'll get there, because, it's, you know, it's just, I think that's the only thing that's really stopping the complete understanding how this sort of, as I say, I totally understand what you're saying, and then there's this little bit that seems to blacken everything and obliterate the real understanding. You know, it's sort of, I acknowledge what you say. Perhaps I should say I acknowledge what you're saying, but there's something that doesn't want to let me really get in touch with it.
So
I shall work on that. It's my homework.
Don't work on it too hard.
No. All right. Well,
I won't. Because your body wisdom is already doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, it's already doing the work for you. It's a getting out of the way rather than a doing.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's hard for our mind to get around that.
Yeah.
We don't actually have to do it. We don't have to do the feeling. We don't have to do the releasing.
Yeah. It is the unlearning of all the things that you've...
It's trusting that the intelligence in the system will actually take care of it, which it does, and it will. You know, it's the same intelligence that's operating for us psychologically as what takes care. You know, when you cut your finger, what do we have to do to help it to heal?
Nothing.
Keep out the way. Just keep out the way. The more you mess with it, thinking that you're helping, the more we delay it and we prolong it. You know, just clean the dirt off, leave it alone. The miracle of self-healing performs itself. It's exactly the same with emotional healing, psychological healing. It knows what to do better than we do. But the key thing there is, if you've got a feeling coming up, just to let yourself feel it, just to meet it with acceptance. There's something that I learned through the emotional release work, which I did for years, which I see is still valid. No, it hasn't ceased to be valid. And I think one of the traps that three principles often seems to provoke in us is that when we know this, we think, I know it's just a thought now, so I shouldn't be feeling that anymore. Or, you know, I shouldn't have to keep feeling that pain because I know it's just from some old thought which is no longer valid. So it gives us another reason to judge what we're feeling. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not helpful. That's not really what this is about. We've added another layer of thought to what's going on, because healing is still It's a process, if you like. Just like physical healing is a process, psychological and emotional healing is also a process. And we can compress the time enormously. Something that we used to think took 15 years, actually, that can be let go of in a very, very short time. But sometimes the body has to still feel something that it wasn't allowed to feel previously. I'll give you an example. Supposing you were a little kid and you experienced a situation that was really scary for you as a child. But someone around you who you trusted innocently, and because they cared for you, they said to you, "Oh, don't be afraid. Don't be scared. Don't worry. There's nothing to be scared of." And they convinced you that that feeling that you were having was, in a sense, not valid. So what did you do? You made it go away. And you put on a brave face and you said, "Okay." Right? And you found a way to kind of get through and to cope with life. And you forgot that you ever did that. And then ever since then, whenever you met a situation that was scary, you remembered unconsciously that that's what got you through last time. So you've been doing it ever since. I'm not saying this is true for anyone in this room, but I would say we've all got some version of this, what, that we learned, and then we forgot that we learned it. So what we've learned there is the certain feeling comes into my body that I shouldn't be feeling. What I do is I kind of push it away and then I get on with life. Now the body in its wisdom, all it knows is that it just needs to feel things, and when it's felt them completely, they're gone. And completely, how long does that take? Well, you watch your two-year-old doing a complete emotion. It's not a long time. It's just the fact that they let themselves feel it fully. That's what enables them to recover so quickly. So that's why the youngster, they can be so upset and so in it, and then the next moment they're so happy and so free of it, because they completed it. So our body wisdom is the same as what the young child has. All it wants to do is to feel it fully, and then it's complete. And the only thing that's blocking that is a judgment about it, which probably was someone else's judgment originally, and then it becomes your judgment if you took that on.
There's a course called the Hoffman Process.
Yeah, I know it, yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Basically, you get through all the physical stuff as well. So all the things you've suppressed or angry felt or whatever you spend.
Yeah.
It's an 8-day residential thing.
Yeah.
And you basically spend the first 4 days screaming, jumping, smashing things.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah. You get permission to feel all those things.
Yeah,
and
it's really about sort of letting your body, the hardwire of your body, work through all the things that have got to work through.
Yeah.
And then after that, you just feel kind of light as a bird and just really happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite dark for a bit, then it gets really light.
Yeah.
It's quite a nice thing to do. So if you've got all the stuff to work through and you've got the time to do it, it's a fabulous thing to do.
This is where
exactly what, like, this is exactly what I was wondering now.
Go ahead.
As you were speaking, because I felt like release work was.
Yeah.
It's very much the. It kind of feels like this is. This would be a situation where it's already there. It's
yeah.
At the surface, so it's.
It just wants to be felt.
Into,
yeah.
Going into the content of it. When it's there, when it's already at the surface, would that be useful?
Well, it depends what you mean by going into the content of it. For me, all that's necessary is to feel it in the body. You don't actually have to make any story about it, unless one comes to you. Now, if something comes to you as an insight, that's part of the healing, that's part of the completion. But it's what came to you. It's not what you went looking for. So to me, that's an important distinction. And if it doesn't come to you, then you didn't need to know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've seen a lot of people heal stuff. They didn't even know what it was. They just know that it felt strong. But if they let themselves feel it, it goes. Whereas other people, they go into the feeling, and that feeling triggers a memory. And that memory gives them an insight, an understanding. They suddenly see, oh, geez, that's where I learned that. And that helps complete it for them. But it's all happening internally. It's not anybody imposing that or saying, you know, this is how you should understand it. It's only necessary when it is. That's my conclusion. If you need to know, it's given to you. I would say the majority of the time, we don't even need to know. You know, the body wisdom just takes care of it.
You see, with release, for what I felt was it kind of... I needed personally, like I still feel sometimes I need help, like, because you don't want to go there. Normally, you just don't want to go there. You don't want to feel it. If it's something you don't want to feel,
that's
you
right.
keep putting it down. And there's a lot of resistance. So when I came to you for release work, it was very helpful because you helped bring in the acceptance.
Exactly.
Right?
That's
exactly
the role of the facilitator. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't know if, like with the three principles, it's like you're saying you're going back into the kitchen, so you stop. But there's stuff that's that will come up as I do you know
yeah.
what I mean? I mean,
yeah,
is
yeah.
it you? Mm.
Yeah, it seems contradictory again, but it's not really.
Is it still helpful, you know, to do that? To like, if I came to you for release work, would that
yeah.
still might that still be helpful and useful? And
only if it's what was really needed.
Okay.
And this is the problem, is that something becomes a technique, and then we think that technique, because it really helped with that person or that issue, therefore I should apply that technique to everything else, and it's going to help me clear out all my stuff. But actually, maybe it was only needed for that bit. That's what I see as the limitation of the techniques, and it's the same with the journey work and all these other things, is that you see people now, I know people who've been doing journey work now for 12, 15 years. And say, oh yeah, every week I do two journeys a week still. I like, they're proud of it, you know. And I was like, why? Why?
I feel that whatever, I'm not saying yes, they should go to me, but I think the majority of people, because the way Brandon puts it across is more as issues come up and you're clearing up your system, like clutters.
Yeah, I know.
Accumulating and you're clearing it down. Dealing with it as you're going along, so that there is no blockages. No, that's. I think that's the way.
And I guess if you get
forward
to the stage of not adding to the thought.
Well.
If you have that insight, then.
You see again.
They'll always come up.
There's always going to be content, because we live in the world of thought, and we're generating new thought every moment of every day. So this is why it becomes endless.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There's
I
no
think
end.
No,
to the material that you could be working on. But my question is it really necessary? And what I start to see is that when you understand the nature of it, where it's originating from, that becomes less and less necessary, except on select occasions. So right now here, I just saw this is release work. That's like Sharon's body almost was asking for it. It just wants to feel something that's there that's ready to be felt. Without analysis or without even, you know, without making a story about it. But I wouldn't have proposed that to her before she started talking.
Mm.
I said, excuse me, but it looks to me like you need release work, you know. To me, it's something, it would be an appropriate response to something that you meet in the individual in the moment. So you see someone that's got a strong feeling and you can see they're conflicted around feeling it. Well, what does release work offer? It just brings loving acceptance to something that the person's judging themselves about. That's all it is. And when you bring loving acceptance to something in place of judgment, the release happens by itself. There's no work to do. It's actually a misnomer, release work. It's loving acceptance work, really. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we can all bring that. You know, if you bring loving acceptance to somebody who's struggling with something, then they connect with that in themselves, something in them relaxes a little bit, they get somewhere, even if you don't say it. You mean it's okay for me to feel this? Is it okay for me? Just, yeah, it's okay with me. Could you let it be okay for a moment? All right. And the moment they drop into it, the body does it. It's like, oh, it's like a relief. Thank God. I don't have to manage it anymore. I don't have to do anything with it. I don't need to contain it. I can just let myself feel it. Whew. That's just like the little kid, you know, the little kid who's upset. And they're trying, you know, like you see little kids and they're trying to be grown up. About they're upset, like they're trying to be brave, and actually, what is it? And it's the moment you pick them up, they just go, you know, right? That's what the body wants to do. I had this with my daughter, she's 10 now, and so she's, you know, she's at that point where she's trying to be a grown up little adult half the time, and yet, you know, she felt a bit off colour, she was a bit sick, and I could see it, and I was like, asked her, what's wrong? I don't know what's wrong. Have you got a headache? No, I was just tummy's fine. And it was like her voice was getting a bit teary, you know. I could just hear it, but she was, you know, she was trying to be brave and everything, and so nothing that I was asking her was helping. So I just looked and I said to her, "Do you want a cuddle?" That was it, you know. It was like all she wanted was just to be held. Stop these stupid questions, you know. It's like she just wanted to feel held and that she was okay. Just to feel held and safe. That was it. That was the remedy. So do we call that release work with a kid?
No, I mean,
do you know what I mean? We wouldn't call it.
Yeah,
we wouldn't call it release work, but actually that's what it was.
Yeah.
She just, because she felt that loving acceptance, so then she just dropped into the feeling. She just let herself be a teary little girl for a few minutes, and then she was fine. Now, when we're grown up, we turn that into a technique, and then it becomes something that we think we should do to clear out all these trauma and all this nonsense. It becomes way too complicated. But if you see in the moment that someone's holding something, and they're struggling with it, just bring the loving acceptance. Just, you know, bring the love and the understanding. You don't even need to know what it is, content-wise. You don't need to go there. The love and the acceptance is enough.
That's what happened on Tuesday. I'm not sure if I've said this morning. I feel like I told it to somebody yesterday. I had to stand up for myself. Somebody was bullying me in the meeting. Where there is no time limit. Have I said this morning?
I don't think so. I haven't heard it before. Okay. Anyway. Not today.
I go to these meetings where the well, basically it's Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever. There's no that's another thought thing. That's another totally different thing altogether. But in the meeting, there's no time limit necessarily, or there's no content. You just experience strength and hope. You might have somebody else who's just come in and can't deal with their not drinking, and so you just show them there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and some people really can't think, they can't even get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you have to hold their hand. And the secretary, I was talking about the housing thing, I was talking very slowly to get the witness, for me to, I've got to write some bullet point thing, presentation. And I was nearly crying, because it is, a long 18 years of shit. I'm aware of it. It's not 18 years. I know what it is, though. And he just said, I was at the back of the meeting, so I was talking quite loudly. And he said, could you wrap it up now? Quite a few people are getting bored with this. Oh, brilliant. I said, this is something about we've hear about your housing issues. I said, listen. Loudly, and it's the first time I've actually shouted it. I didn't even shout, I raised my voice. So I'm quite gobby, but not inappropriate. Not in my head, I'm gobby. Fantastic. And I just pointed at him and said, you can't tell people. You cannot tell people what to say, how long to say. So I'm here to share my experience, strength and hope with each other. And I said, you've done that to me before. You tried to shut me up twice before in a meeting. This is outrageous in these meetings. They're supposed to be a safe place, tolerant. And the theme was humility. It was hysterical. And I just put my finger, I said, you're a fucking bully. Don't ever fucking tell me what the out it came. Articulate, and nobody told me to shut up. And I just, there was a bit more. I said, you know, you tried to shut me up before. I said, you will never shut me up. Tell me what the fuck to do. You think you are? Bloody-tastic. And I sat at the back and I looked at him, giving my eyes look. And at the end, he wasn't nice. He just said, oh, at the end, to redeem himself, he said, oh, if you want some help with your housing issues. I said, I'm going to punch your damn face first, love. Didn't say that bit. I just sat there with what you were saying. It had to come out.
Mm.
The anger was controlled, but it was, there it goes, gone. Thank you very much. And I went home. I went to the meditation meeting afterwards, which was very funny. And my brain was going, I was thinking, thank you, that's all that I had, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, in action.
Yes.
I went home, called it home, phoned the victim support people, got an appointment. She helped me a lot when I told her about this. phoned my MP, my councillor, he phoned me. He knew about what the situation was with this guy. And something else I did. I just went, that is it. This is, in practice,
right.
Three principles.
Yeah.
And not putting anything out like, why are you angry?
Exactly. Exactly. That's the difference. That's the difference. And when you see that, there's no such thing as a negative feeling.
Yeah, it's just like...
It's just what's there. It's just what's there in the moment.
Most satisfactory.
Yeah.
And then I had to go home and have a sleep. It's the best thing.
Mm.
So I'm aware of it. You know, thinking, some things that I think have been awful, keep my gob shut for years. I've been gobby inappropriately and vicious.
Right.
And bullying. So, yeah, that's it. I'm aware of my bullying. Thank you very much. Because we look at ourselves. But I'm also very kind in not bullying.
Right.
I was telling in a therapy session. I choose now with this to. Is it appropriate?
Hmm.
Or am I just thinking shit? Is it? I describe it as the train of drivel passing through the station of blah, and they laughed, and I went, that's what it is. You know, I'm going to be.
It's a great story because it shows, I mean, what it says to me, it speaks of that fact that anything can be appropriate in a given context.
Mm.
And who are we to judge, you know? Who are we to say?
And it did help a lot of other people.
Yeah.
Because it's brought the meeting back. There are, not rules, no, there are rules. You know, we behave appropriately in these meetings. We don't threaten, we don't over-talk people. We listen to whatever they have to say, maybe tediously shitty.
Yeah.
And... whatever. But they're going to have a group conscience. One woman threatened to kick him in the bollocks. That's not appropriate. But he has to.
It reminds me of a story actually, which is very nice. It came. Sounds like a riot. It came up in the last weekend that I attended, a training weekend with Mark, and. And he was telling it, he told a story. There was a woman in the group that we were in, and she kind of faced this, she had this situation with a client or somebody that was giving her a lot of kind of verbal, you know, intimidatory verbal sort of barrage of questioning and all this stuff. And she was really thrown by it, you know, and she didn't know how to respond, and she felt like she really lost her bearings. And the problem was made worse for her because in her own mind, she's thinking, well, I know that how I'm feeling is just coming from my thinking, so, you know, why am I getting caught in this kind of thing? And Mark told this great story where he said he was in a situation with somebody and they were working with prison inmates. And there was somebody in that group that he was working with who had a similar energy, but also a kind of violence behind it, you know, like really intimidatory and very, very bullying. So whatever the Mark and the other teacher were trying to share, this guy was just being like very belligerent, you know, very angry and argumentative, putting them down and so on. And Mark said he's like, he just lost it, you know, he didn't know where to go with this at all. And whatever he tried to gently explain was just, you know, completely thrown back in his face. And at some point, the woman who was helping him, she just said to her, she said, can I offer something here? And Max is like, sure, go ahead, you know, I've lost the plot anyway, I don't know. Despite the fact he was the most senior trainer of the two. So this woman, she just looked this guy in the eye, who's like, you know, twice the height and size of her, and she just said to him, you know, when you talk like that, it really frightens me. It really frightens me. I get really scared. And then I'm not in a position to be able to help or offer anything that's of any value. So I just want you to know that. Of course, the guy shut up immediately, and the whole room, you know, you could have heard a pin drop. And Mark was like, wow, that's what needed to be said. That's exactly. Now, even though you could say, well, that's against pre-principles, you know, to say that someone else doing so-and-so is making me frightened, we know that that's not true. But in that moment, that was true. You see the difference? In that moment, both Mark and the other woman, they were actually scared of the energy, the violence and the intimidatory energy that was coming across. They both got scared by it. and they were trying to accommodate for that and work around it. What it needed was someone to just say so.
Yeah, it's magic.
And that just cut through the crap.
Yeah.
So your story just reminded me of that.
Mm.
And he said, like, you know, this is something to keep in mind, is it's like, don't disconnect yourself from truth because of your supposed understanding of the principles, you know. Don't talk yourself out of saying the truth cleanly or in whatever way it comes out just because you think you know better. You know, sometimes it's just got to be said.
I demand a
resolution. Yeah, that's it. So it's a great example.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing it. It's a good example. And you could see from how you felt subsequent and what you were suddenly able to accomplish, and there was a clarity that came through,
yeah,
that followed that. And nobody was harmed. Wasn't you didn't put a knife in it or anything like that, you know?
They heard me talking about my machete. Believe me, I'm going to take that machete and cut the man down the head off. This is bus talk, by the way.
Well,
and I thought,
you know,
just a joke, because it's
if you say, well, where do you draw the line? That's where I draw. You know, if someone's going to get harmed, you draw the line there. But if it's a question of speaking your truth and not worrying if somebody's offended, speak it.
Yeah, you know. And also underneath that. I can't even think of what the word was to describe the emotion. I didn't even have a chance to say, I know it's fear, the bullying thing. I have my moment of thank you very much, and I haven't been afraid.
That's it.
I'm not afraid now.
That's it. Something shifted in you.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you
and
give yourself permission to go with it.
Somebody,
Tuesday, I got my guts back. Yeah. Nice. So this, you see, this is not incompatible with what we're learning.
It's
not at all.
Of this.
Exactly. You see, exactly. Mm. It doesn't look like that. It looks contradictory, but it absolutely isn't.
Mm.
And same with what I was saying to Sharon and to Sarah. It looks like there's a contradiction. So, well, just let yourself feel it, even though you know that this feeling is just coming from. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you know that it's coming from an old story which is no longer true. If your body needs to feel it, it needs to feel it. You just let that be true too, you know, as well. Yeah. So, well done. Thank you.
So, I had a confusing situation this week, and I kind of went round and round the houses and couldn't quite work out what happened. So, as a work and journalist had written an article about me, and it wasn't very flattering, which I can, you know, live with whatever I said, and live with it. It just wasn't very true. It put things in a sort of unbalanced way. And so I was like, well, you know what, I'm going to balance this up and give you, you know, the comments you've made are factually inaccurate,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to correct you and go through this whole sort of rigmarole. And then I was like, you know, do I really care about this? You know, I'm not going to stay at work very much longer anyway. Yeah. It's just my ego talking. You know, do I care? Don't I care? And I just kind of got a bit caught up in whether this one has written something about me, wrote something about me last year as well, which was a bit just went round and round, not quite working out whether I cared about it or not. And you know, 1 minute I didn't care, and I was like, someone said, I read this article about you. And I was like, yeah, well, it wasn't particularly nice. Good. I said, okay, so I hope you're not letting it bother you. I'm like, no, not at all.
Well, not in this moment, anyway.
it was, I mean, it's boring work things, I mean, it's not exciting. Do I care about it? I do now. No, I don't. I don't really care about it. I come to work and, you know, I can, you know, see it on my email. And I feel a bit like you, Korean. I can't quite work out whether I'm...
Yeah. Should I care about it?
It's just sort of a bit confusing, really. And I was, yeah, I suppose in the end I say I let it go, but I haven't let it go because I'm talking about it now.
Clearly,
so it's
exactly.
Bloody irritating.
Right. Right, so that's the truth.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
Is the truth.
Exactly.
I'm all scrunched.
Yeah.
I'm not open. So, yeah, it's just sort of confused me a bit. Made me think, I don't know whether I need to let it go or just completely ignore it or just, you know, pajamas and flakes myself to a feather.
I'll tell you something that I found in similar circumstances is that for me, the act of writing a response, whether or not I send it anywhere, the act of writing a response has helped me to get clear.
It did help.
Is that something you've actually done?
No, I did. I sent it. So I didn't send it to the journalist because we have there's a wall in between.
Yeah.
So I sent it to the person who liaises with the journalist.
Right.
And it was just like, it was like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
These are the actual facts.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like I've got the moral high ground. But it's only, again, it's only my thoughts and it's only my ego talking, which is not that important anyway. People read it and they go, whatever, it's in their thoughts.
Yeah.
But still, it sort of rankles me because it's not actually true.
Right. Yeah.
Another reason to leave work. Irritating people writing stupid.
Well, it doesn't, no. You know, I always think that if you're going to make a decision for yourself, like, changing, leaving a job or leaving a situation, do it as cleanly as you can. By which I mean, don't make up reasons that are not, that are just reasons to kind of add a bit of justification. Yeah. You already know that you want to leave.
I know.
Yeah, you don't need that.
That
extra,
as well.
Yeah, and I, to me, it's like stay true to that. Stay true to your own reasons. Yeah.
But can you really decide? Like, so you've got the situation where something has bothered you, and you've got some insight to kind of go, shall I let her, shall I not? Can't really make the decision.
No. The fact that you're having that thought means that it's bothering you, right? You're bothered.
And even what happens with it now, it's only from in here that it can kind of...
resolve.
...have much you...
Yeah.
So you kind of have no control, really.
Well, you do and you don't. What you can see is the degree to which you're taking this as real. So the more real it seems, the more upset you're going to be for reasons out there.
Yeah.
The more you see that it's just my thinking about it, it's the only thing that can upset me.
Yes. But
the less bothered you'll be.
Is it almost like on Sharon's level? You might see it, but seeing it to a degree.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. That's
my thinking, but it's still...
I'm still feeling something here.
There's still something there.
Yeah.
I thought it was gone, the fact I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And that bit's a little bit out of your,
Yeah.
It's more out of your control.
Right. And what was the conversation earlier was pointing to was that sometimes the body just needs to feel that in order to be able to really let it go. You just need to let yourself feel it. And what prevents the cycle completing is the judgment we have about the feeling. So you say, well, I should be above all that now, I shouldn't let this get to me. That's what keeps it in place.
But sometimes the act of actually just saying it, just kind of...
Sometimes saying it, sometimes writing it,
yeah.
But often just letting yourself feel it,
yeah.
Minus the judgment.
Yeah.
So, well, actually I've got this really pissed off feeling inside me. Chances are you've felt that before.
Yeah.
But it might be that you've learnt to have a judgment about that feeling.
Mm.
And that's just a habitual thing that we all learn, that it's not okay to feel certain things.
Yeah.
But it's just about letting yourself feel it.
I feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the paradox. If you let yourself feel something that you've been judging, you will automatically feel better.
Mm.
Even if the feeling that you let yourself feel is a bad one. If you let yourself go there, you feel better.
I have a lot of difficulty doing that on my own.
We all do.
Myself
we all do.
Feel things.
And we've all got judgment about certain feelings.
Mm.
We've all got ones that are okay, and ones that are less okay, and ones that are taboo. I'm not going to go with that one.
It's always good to say, if you sound off against someone, it's always... But it often helps.
That can help if
sometimes
you've got a good listening.
It's harder to do with your partner than it is the neutral person.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can feel like you just add to it by giving it a welly.
Well, that's the other side of it, and it's good to know the difference.
Mm.
Yeah, sometimes you can just recruit somebody in how badly you've been treated, and it's not helpful.
Mm.
But I had a situation a couple of weeks ago where I bought a new double bass for my daughter and I spent a lot of money on it, and we bought it in London and brought it back to Dublin, and there wasn't any time or no people went open for me to get a second opinion, and I had to take on trust that there wasn't a soundpost crack, which is the worst thing. It's an old bass and there's lots of bashes and things that have happened to it. And so when I took it to a guy in Dublin, he said, oh my God, another €1,500 worth of repairs needed to be done, including a soundpost crack, which is the worst thing. So I said, oh, he said, well, you should really take it back to this bloke, and well, you should talk to him. I said, well, I didn't buy it from a dealer, I bought it as a private sale, a sporting trust. So I kind of rang up this bloke and said, look, bought this bass from you, and you said there wasn't a soundpost crack. And he went ballistic on the phone, and I couldn't get a word in edgeways. And that thing about answering aggression with aggression, I mean, I couldn't. I was completely, I started to shake all over. I actually put the phone on speaker so two other people could hear it, and they were quaking.
So you were like Mark in this situation that he described. You know, not this Mark, but the...
Yeah. And I kind of resolved it in the sense that I talked to my husband about it, and he said, well, what can you do about it? If you buy a second-hand car from somebody and it's rubbish, you can't say, I don't want it anymore, give me my money back. I did kind of say that to this bloke when he stopped to take a breath. And so you just have to forget, I said. You just have to stop now and put it down. You don't even put it down to experience. But here am I saying it.
Because I feel that I learnt nothing from this. I could still be completely destroyed by some dickhead. I'm sorry, that's what he was.
Yeah.
And actually, he really did have some sort of serious mental health problem. But it was me that felt that it was me that had the mental health problem. And I still have to pay €1,500 to get this bass. And of course I haven't said anything to my daughter because she's going to feel... So I have to just...
Oh well.
It's an oh well situation, but it's that thing of I'm even feeling quaky saying it, and this sort of complete onslaught. Well, I'm probably quite aggressive when I need to be, but I mean that's just couldn't do it. And I said, yeah, okay, fine. I don't need to do this anymore. And it's his thinking and blah 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 blah. But that was only a surface. It's not
exactly
about
exactly
from that really
that's
deep
it
place.
That's great. That's great that you saw that.
But you know, what does it do for me?
It's enough to see that.
Alright.
That's €1,500 worth, right there. Really?
I mean, it's one of those no win situations.
Well, it looks like that from a certain perspective.
Yeah.
But if you're just seeing that there's a disconnect, or there's a big difference between the intellectual understanding and then the reality of the moment, that's a great thing to really see experientially. Because it's easy to get caught in our ideas of what we've understood about this when we take them seriously. But then real life will give you a situation where it shows you clearly, this is what I call the truth of the moment, is when the life situation you're in reveals to you the depth of your understanding in that moment. It shows you.
I mean, I had a physical response to it, but I suppose I also was detached from it because I could put the phone on speaker and I could, these other two could hear it. And so they were kind of reinforcing the fact that actually it wasn't to do with me.
Right, yeah, this guy's a bit cuckoo here.
Yeah, but next time the universe will give you a beautiful instrument and he'll...
Next time he'll never sell an instrument
well,
to anybody in London again.
Okay.
Wait until...
Anybody got the time?
Privately,
got
the past one. 20 minutes or
okay.
Something, yeah.
I thought it must be lunchtime.
But on eBay, you can report saying it's fraudulent. Or you could go to a small claims court, or go to a citizen's advisor. So what is my recourse Because if he's doing selling things like that to you, he could be doing worse things to somebody else. This is my equal rights and justice. because that's what I'm in at the moment.
There comes a point where standing up for yourself is valid.
Yes.
And worthwhile.
Yeah. And another point where it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Letting it go is actually the easiest.
It's a wiser course of action. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know what? Okay.
Because you can go the whole journey and bring it to the end.
And
yeah.
Still,
how much energy do you want to put into that?
6 months,
yeah.
A year, 5 years, whatever time it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is, you know, this is discernment. This is discrimination. Is knowing the point to just let something go. And another point where you say, no, I'm gonna go for this. I'm gonna stand my ground. Yeah. And no one can tell you which is the right course of action in any given situation. That's your own common sense.
Mm. But it's so beautiful when we've all had, I'm not belittling that at all, but everybody's had something, you know, shit equivalent that's kind of happened. And we do actually let it go.
Yeah. Hey! It's lunchtime, John. Well done for getting here, but we're literally just about to stop for lunch. Yeah, keep your jacket on, because we're... Yeah.
If you manage to let it go quickly.
Yes.
I smashed the front of Stuart's Jeep into the gate, just took the turn.
Oh, you did?
And, yeah, but I don't know, it didn't bother me. No, but it happened, there was nothing like...
Exactly.
It happened, so I couldn't change it.
Exactly.
And it's actually not bothered me in the slightest.
Yeah.
I don't have any feelings about it apart from it happened.
Yeah.
But, yeah... Funny. You could equally go, shit, that's coming close.
You could have spent some serious time dwelling on that and beating yourself up and guilt tripping and all the rest of it.
But I didn't control that. Just,
yeah.
I
just reacted that way.
Yeah.
I didn't do that.
Yeah.
I could have said I should have more knowledge and I could have... Blah, blah, blah,
exactly.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and that's good to see, that you didn't add a big story to it, which was unnecessary.
Yeah.